All right. Can you all hear me? Excellent. Well, thank you for coming along to this session on an extremely cold day, at least in here. And Chris was telling me, I think I told all of you, that if you stand behind the projector, there's a warm sort of wind coming out. You can warm your hands. But thank you so much for coming along to the session. I just want to start by saying this is not going to take 75 minutes. Because then we'll have turned into ice. So it's probably more like 40, 45 minutes. All right, so if you've got plans for go out and get defrosted afterwards, then you've got time to do that. The session we have on today, Simon will introduce himself shortly. If you haven't bumped into him, he's been called on to do a lot of different sessions here during the week, but he's an expert and previously been an executive in a financial services organization. You can talk more about that. So he's got real personal experience about how you engage the C leaders in your organizations on your social journey. I'm the CEO of Swoop Analytics, and we were so fortunate to be able to sit with one of the most, advanced leaders when it comes to engaging people in a real and authentic way in our little country of Australia. So I'll start to explaining a story based on our interview with David Thodey, who is the ex-CEO of Telstra, which is a very large telco, actually the largest telco in Australia. David came to Telstra at a time where the organization was really struggling. And that's the time where he became the CEO. He was there for a number of years, and the share price during that time went from zero to hero. If you want to, the story I'm telling you here, the interview we had with David Thodey is documented in a series of blog posts. And if you Google Thodey and Swoop, you'll find this three-part blog series. So all the detail I'm gonna go through is documented there, and it's a fantastic story for you to read and hopefully share. He was a very generous man with his time. It's not often you get a whole hour with people at that level. And we also interviewed him after he left Telstra, which made him a little bit more open about his experience. But it was amazing. When he got into Telstra, it was, from what he was telling us, it was very much a tech-centric company. You can imagine a telco where it's all about, maybe not unlike Microsoft, a lot of technicians. And hopefully unlike Microsoft, Telstra was not really a particularly customer-centric culture, and that was the primary challenge that Thodey was facing. During his tenure, he introduced, totally shifted the culture. And if you ever heard about the Net Promoter Score, hands up, have you heard about that, the concept of Net Promoter Score? It's basically a very easy way for people after you've interacted, the client gets to rate you, would you recommend us to one of your friends, from 1 to 10? And then you have this Net Promoter Score, whether you want to recommend the service or the product to someone else. And David Thodey introduced that across the organization. He also came at a time where they were very, very siloed and had a very email-centric culture. What happened, he knew, was that things were being filtered off before it even got to him. People were deliberately being included or excluding in messages, and it led to this very, very fractured communication style. And he felt that he didn't have any real and authentic conversations with the people that actually had the interactions with the clients. So when he was sitting up in the equivalent of the penthouse apartment, he didn't get all the noise had been filtered off. So he wanted to change that. How do I get to talk to people at the shop floor? So the interesting thing what happened was that he went out to the field and he actually met with people out that were servicing customers, and he noticed, and we were talking to some of these young people, that they were doing something, on their computers and something on their phones, and they were asking about, I think it was a Nokia, the really old ones, 61, remember those 6110 or whatever, I think it was a problem around that. And this person was able to contact another of their colleagues and get back to the customer with the answer really quickly. And from that time, Thodey saw the connection between enterprise social Yammer and being a much more responsive, customer-centric organization. And from that time, he was simply hooked on. He said, I want to join into that. At this point in time, Yammer was still a free network. Remember those days? Are any of you guys still on? I don't think it exists anymore. Does it, the free network? I think, or from my understanding, is that it's not going to be around for much longer anyway. I think we're all going to go into Office 365 to get access to Yammer in the future. But that was kind of, he saw that it was this grassroots movement of people that were doing interesting things that actually benefited the customer. Thodey had this view that outcome beats process, and he did not want any of these processes to be inhibitors for getting work done. And I'm going to show you how he actually how he did that. His as I said, his key enemy was around processes, and this tied back to this very hierarchical, not very customer-centric organization that he, if you like, kind of inherited. And he gave this quote to us that process must be enablers for getting work done, and not impediments. And that's, isn't that kind of amazing? You have someone at that senior level making these sort of comments. Not just being someone that is full on for government and strict process and reporting. He saw the power of letting, let's just make sure we get customer centric. Let's solve the problem and let's not get the process to get in the way. He put this thing out. So in my talk yesterday, a general talk about analytics, I explained the difference between different engaging styles. And this is a style of a post that he put out himself in his own name to everyone at Telstra. And he basically said, top 10 time wasters and unnecessary approvals and processes. Can you see how that ties in with his whole drive to let's focus on the customer and what gets in the way. Team, please post an ad, your top time wasting and unnecessary approval process. We'll either fix or explain why it exists. So it wasn't that we're just going to remove all the process. I mean, oftentimes process is there for a good reason. But let's have a look at whether it really adds any value to drive, to delight the customer. And he got 873 replies to that single post. Now, Thodey didn't tell me how many of those things were actually implemented afterwards. He probably didn't know. But I've talked to people that is closer to Telstra, and they said to me that about 60% of the initiatives that were identified were actually implemented afterwards. And this is one of those ways in which senior executives can link the use of Yammer to drive real business outcomes. I think he should be, I would love to see many more executives tapping into the power of the organizations. People and the frontline know what the problems are, right? They just need to be asked. Now, there's a few other things that benefits that he got out from using Yammer. One of the stories he was telling us was that there was this person posting an idea on their Yammer network about things that they would like to do. And another person replied, you know what, as they say in Australia, mate, that's never going to work here. Management will never approve of this. Thodey injected himself into that threat and said, hey, I'm management. I don't think it's such a bad idea. I would like to hear more about this. So what it did, it enabled him to kill this management mythology about what management actually thinks, because every management label sort of have a view of what they think their bosses and the bosses might actually want. And he was able to kill that off and say, no, go on, approve. I think this sounds like, I'm not approving it anything, but I think this is worth having a look at. It's a very, very powerful way. As I said, the one about starting conversations, it's turning yourself from, and I think we cannot find out who made this quote, but it's the difference about being interesting and being interested, right? So you could ask, he could have said, these are the top 10 time wasting things, and now this is what I want you to do in the future. And that would have been a broadcasting, a telling. But instead he turned around and said, I'm going to be interested in what you're doing and how we can actually work together to deliver better outcomes for our clients. The third story he was telling us was about consulting staff when they were drafting policy that had implications for staff. And I've heard this from other companies as well, where before they launch a travel or an expense policy or make updates to it, just run it past people and say, we are thinking about doing changes like this. What sort of impacts may they have that we may haven't thought about? And here again, they got loads of feedback about proposed policy changes that allow them to make tweaks rather than publish something and get them this enormous amount of negative feedback about why it won't work. They were able to build in that comment before they issued the final version of the policy. So I think absolutely beautiful examples of how progressive leaders, if you like, those that are interested in having conversations with staff, can use Yammer to have that sort of engagement that you would never, ever be able to do differently. The last story I'll just say, which was fascinating, I talked about how they were moving into this net promoter culture, net promoter, the use of net promoter score. They did that the first year, and the whole company, it was one single net promoter score for the whole company. One of the challenges, though, they had was to get everyone to move a line around customer success and delighting the customer. And that's hard in a large organization. So he said, we're going to have one single KPI for the whole organization, align everyone to this net promoter score. Year one, the whole company, they met that. So everyone got their bonus. Year two, they met it. They got their bonus. Year three, someone didn't meet it. So the whole company didn't meet their targets. So no one got a bonus. Huge outcry, as you can imagine. Huge outcry. This is not fair. Our department, we did everything that we had to do. But you and your team, you failed. It's your fault. You shouldn't get a bonus, but I should get mine. And this was all this sort of silo competitive thinking that they've had in the past that was preventing them from working as one team. The conversation, what would normally have happened without Yammer, would have been that there would have been an annual employee culture survey, and of course it would have went, boom, this is terrible, everyone is unhappy, and they would have had focus groups, and it would have taken a year to walk through all of this. Now, all those conversations were happening close to real time, which means that management were able to say, and that's what he did, injected himself into conversations and said, guys, I told you this, right? You know, this is the third year going, there should be no surprises. We have to meet a one company KPI or no one gets anything. And he didn't get a bonus either, right? It's all for all of us. Still huge outcry, but they could have the discussion there. He said, it's like one big ongoing town hall meeting. So I think it's a beautiful example of, yes, it's not just all about celebrating success. You have to go out, and sometimes it's not positive news, but get it out in the open, let's talk about it, and management, again, can use this to kill off some of that mythology about what management think and what they don't think. What surprised me probably the most in the interview we had with Thoti, when he said, I learned things on Yammer. It changed me personally. I think that's an extremely powerful quote from such a senior executive. Humble little me running a much, 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 much smaller organization can relate to what he's saying. Yesterday, I was telling about a story about how we're using Yammer in our organization and how I have been in the early years been a broadcaster and just publishing and sending out links and saying, oh, I've met this customer, we're doing this and doing that, and didn't really get a lot of engagement. Not until my co-founder and our chief scientist, when I was challenging him, I said, why is no one liking or posting what I'm doing? He said, well, have you thought about what you're doing? Have you thought about the things you're putting out in Yammer? And that kind of very painful self-reflection really changed me and the way that I interact with people on Yammer. And Thoti was expressing similar sort of thoughts about how it changed him, the things he learned, the people he got to meet. As a senior executive with 40,000 employees, you've got no chance of meeting everyone, right? No chance. Even I think their top executive leadership team is close to 300 people. Just imagine spending just 10 minutes with people in the top leadership team, or your whole week will be gone in meetings. So Yammer is the only platform where you can really reach out to such a large group of people. He had this beautiful quote about change and what we're seeing in our workplaces. He's saying the nature of work has changed. Collaboration is a necessity. It's not a nice to have. We had to change. And Yammer was a tool for facilitating significant change.
So, you can be lucky in your organization and have an executive like that who quickly gets the opportunity and engages in the change. But if you're starting out, how do you influence the C-suite? How do you take people on this journey? I was someone who went on a bit of a journey with Yammer myself. When I first encountered Yammer, I was a general manager in a large Australian bank. I saw a potential, a bit like David Thodey, but I had to understand it, I had to explore it. And over a period of 4 years, as my roles changed, I actually ended up being the CEO of a division of that bank. As my roles changed, I worked out that there was a particular way to go through a journey, and it really involved understanding your C-suite stakeholders and beginning to influence them through the way they think. So let's think about the modern C-suite executive. In fact, it's everyone in this room. What are you experiencing? The goals are bigger than ever. There's change, there's disruption, there's lots going on. Your diaries are full, your calendars are full, everything's happening. There's not a lot of time to get stuff done. Your organization is continually trying to seek for value, and that time poor element really makes a conversation about doing something extra hard to justify. How do I fit something extra into my day? One of the other challenges these executives have is that context creates a real demand for effective business outcomes. If I'm going to spend time on this, it better be driving my business forward. It better be delivering me something that really changes my organization. Or else, really, to be honest, I've got other strategic priorities that are more pressing. So you want to talk to me about what? Social technology? Do we need that? What's the rationale? So don't talk to these stakeholders in terms of the technology you're implementing. Start with what matters to them, their strategy and strategic priorities, the value you can create for the business. The other thing to bear in mind is that there's some things that are working in your favour. Modern strategic senior executives are very well aware the organisation's changed. Their lives have changed. The company's competing in global networks. It's dealing with any time, anywhere, in its customers, in its employees, and everywhere across its processes. There's way more data, there's way more information, there's so much more to handle. There's all these novel digital technologies. How do I respond? What do we do about digital? Customers are demanding we be more digital. What does that mean in our organization? We're facing competitors who have completely different business models. Some of them offer a product that competes with the job our product does for free. What do we do about that? So suddenly these organizations, and these are all leverage points in your conversation with a strategic executive. Because what they're starting to realize, and what the business press is telling them, and what they're seeing in their competitors, is organizational agility is a strategic imperative. You can't do the same thing for 45, 50, 75 years anymore. If you saw in the early keynotes, Fortune 500 companies last about 15 years now. Organizations need to change and adapt. But when you're a senior executive, you're sitting at the top of a large hierarchy. You might have a lot of status. You might have a fancy role title and, you know, the benefits that come with that. But actually, driving change is a whole lot harder than you think. Because between you and where the work gets done, there are many layers of the organization. And those layers don't always feel as agile as you'd like them to be. It can be really hard to get things done. Early in my career, I led a over 700 person retail distribution business in financial services. I came into that role really excited about driving change. And so in my first few weeks, we were engaging the team in all sorts of change initiatives. One day I went out to a branch in our network, and our branches were managed by people who were a couple of layers beneath me in the organizational hierarchy. And I was talking to the branch manager about all the change conversations I'd started. I'd started five, she'd heard of one. And when I walked out of that conversation, I went to her manager. And that her manager said, oh yeah, I heard of three, but I held two back because it was too much for the branch to hold. And when I went to the manager above, he said, well, I held one back as well. And so what you have is senior executives who'd like a lot of change to happen. The part of the problem in that story, and this is a lesson I learned, was I was driving change off my desk. And we'll come to this later. How do you drive change everywhere in the organization? But what senior executives know very well is their power to order something doesn't always achieve the outcome. So how do you start to help them with that challenge? That's where Peter Thodey knew what he was doing. So this is what senior executives are looking for. They're looking for faster alignment. Does everyone in our organization understand and execute against our strategy? Does our organization know what it knows? Famous quote from HP, if only HP knew what HP knows, it'd be an amazing organization. The challenge of using the information you have. Learning, there's a lot of new technologies and challenges. Solving problems. Meeting customer improvement challenges. So the important point, we could go on listing some of the demands that organizations need to be faster at. But collaboration is not a goal in itself. It's not a new system. It's a way to do one of these things for the strategy in your organization. Every organization, every team in every organization has a different set of goals. You're not talking about collaboration until you're delivering against those goals. You start a conversation with a senior executive that begins, what's the most important thing for you to change? And you've got their attention. And what we want to do is walk through then how you drive that. So the reason I have this approach is when I looked at a lot of the discussion early on in my time trying to work out how to make collaboration work, it was all around usage. Oh, we want to get people to use the tool. We want to get people to post. We want to get people to do more new, different, extra stuff. If you're talking about more work, it sounds like cost to a senior executive. It sounds like a distraction from the day job. So what I wanted to focus on was where do you create the business value? And the business value in your organizations happens in these stages on this chart of solve and innovate. But let me walk you through how we get there. For your organization to be able to leverage social collaboration, it needs to be connected. And that's not just putting Yammer on everyone's desktop. Connection is when people understand what they can do in that tool, they understand who else is there, and they're starting to form relationships with each other, and relationships with purposes that they can fulfill in that network, purposes that benefit the organization and benefit themselves. The next stage is when people feel confident to start to share. They start to share their expertise, they start to share their problems and their challenges. Because it's on that foundation of sharing, a foundation of working out loud, that you'll see work migrate into your network. Just as Peter Thodey discovered, your employees will start to ask, how do I do this? What's the solution to this problem? Does anyone know who's the product manager for this? That's employees starting to use social collaboration as a way to first fix problems in their work and then to dive deeper and actually start to do their work in the tool. Working out loud, creating and sourcing ideas from the community, seeking feedback on early designs, bringing stakeholders up into the process through practices like agile and design thinking. Working out loud and moving through their work in a much more effective way without the versions of artifacts, without the meetings, without the review processes, having agile social conversations to move work forward. And when you get to that point, it's a really easy step for people to say, I've solved my problems here, why can't I realize my opportunities here? I've got a customer who's always wanted our product to do something different. Why doesn't our product do that? That what if question is the birth of innovation. It's the birth of a new strategic agility for your organization. You show a frontline employee driving innovation in your organization to a senior executive, and you've got their attention. Because innovation is one of those holy grails of senior management. It's one of those things that everyone wants, and it's hard to create in organization because it's not just a process, it's a culture. And it needs to be backed by the resources of the organization. So working your way through maturity of collaboration towards innovation is going to have executives' attention. So recapping on some things that you need to set up to capture the attention of senior executives. A strategic rationale for collaboration. Start with whatever your CEO's priorities are. There will be if you've got access to a strategy document, that's a great place to start. If you can't get access to whatever your CEO is currently talking about, and ask yourself and ask others how collaboration could accelerate that goal. Go have a look at if you're a publicly listed company, you can go and have a look at what your senior leadership is telling the market through analyst reports and information in your shareholder centre. You'll find opportunities there where you might be able to connect some of those opportunities to strategic things that your organisation is telling its stakeholders are important. And importantly, you've got to be able to think about why a user might use this. What are the benefits if a user works differently using collaboration? And connect those two things. So the strategic rationale is we think collaboration will accelerate innovation in our organisation, particularly innovation in X product group, which is a strategic priority. And we'd like the rationale for the users in X product group is they need the support of other parts of the organisation to move faster, and we've got an ability for them to work more effectively if we implement collaboration with that team. You go through that process, you've identified your first pilot group. You've identified a strategic priority to pilot in your organisation. And that's what I'm talking about in the three boxes across the bottom. Identifying communities who need to work together on something important and purposeful for the organisation. Doing collaborative work. So it's not about social. It's not about chat. That will happen. That's a feature of the tool. It comes with putting humans on it. What you want to do is make sure there's work there, because it's the work that will drive the value. And if you engage a senior executive in your organisation talking through these elements, what you'll find is you've got their attention. You're asking for their attention by showing them a path to value. Because as I said earlier, senior executives allocate time based on the value it will create for them in achieving their outcomes, in achieving the organisational goals, and ultimately fulfilling the purpose of the organisation. And what I've seen working with a number of different organisations is this. One of the goals that you can talk to executives about is the efficiency opportunity. You know, Yammer will enable us to find information much more quickly. You know, we'll be able to save knowledge worker time. And that's a very well documented benefit. If you have a look, there's a range of papers available. McKinsey's is one that's identified a specific benefit in terms of the efficiency of knowledge manager work. It's a great benefit. But what I'd encourage you to do is go further than just efficiency. Because the challenge with efficiency is it tends to be a fixed dollar amount, and it creates a mindset in your executives that when we've realised that benefit, they need to stop paying attention to Yammer and move on. All right, we're efficient now in terms of sharing information. I can move on to everything else. Whereas when you look at the other side of the ledger, I've seen far greater benefit cases in helping make work more effective. At least four times, and many times it's a multiple much, much higher. If you're talking about a project management worker, helping them better find information on the project might save up to 25% of their time. If you change how effectively that project is implemented, the benefits for the organization are measured in millions and millions of dollars. And they're benefits that flow out to customers, flow out to the organization. Have your conversation about the effectiveness of the work. And that'll require you to do a bit more work tracing where the value gets created. But there's a much bigger story. And this is really important as you go forward in terms of ongoing support for Yammer in your organization and collaboration generally. So, help executives think in terms of networks. You can be sure every executive in your organization thinks in terms of hierarchy. But they're also political. They've got to the top of the hierarchy. So when you ask them to reflect on it, they understand the networks. They know there are teams. They know there are processes that offer value chains through the organization, and that getting anything done requires multiple divisions. There are projects. Introduce them to communities of practice, communities of interest, and other relationship groups. Helping executives to understand successful organizations are organizations that work in a networked way is really important. I recently wrote a blog post, which you'll find on my blog, which is that the hierarchy, the networks in your organization, is actually what makes your hierarchy work. And if you think about your own personal experience, you don't ever go to a meeting to seek approval for your plan without having reached out to someone to try and influence the decision beforehand. You get other people lined up, you go through the network to influence the outcome. You don't treat a meeting as a process, you influence your way there. That's this process of the network, because it's also the network that fixes the broken things in your organization. When two parts of your organization don't join up, it's the person who gives a little resource, bends a little, helps things knit together. Our organizations aren't as efficient as we'd like to think they are because they're structured hierarchically, but they're far more effective because they use the network. Help your senior executives to understand that. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes. So if you want to put the case in front of executives about using Yammer in your organization, talk to them about connecting, sharing, solving, and innovating. And you can see that each of those stages delivers some of the key buzzwords that organizations and senior executives are looking for. Connection, senior executives want to know that everyone's turning up to work and engaged in the organizational vision. They want to know that people are purposeful at work. Asking your employees through Yammer to think about their purposes and join communities based on their purposes is a step in that direction. Sharing, well, do your employees understand the strategy? If you haven't had a conversation in your organization about the strategy and all you've done is emailed out PowerPoint decks, PowerPoint's a wonderful tool, but it doesn't help everyone understand what strategy means. So information engagement comes from conversations. It doesn't come from artifacts. We've talked about solving. You can become a more autonomous organization. You can give people more power to solve problems and move forward. And obviously, as you move into innovation, you're accelerating value creation, you're becoming far more agile, and you're achieving some of those really high-order goals that senior executives are looking for. There are case studies available in Yammer for all of these things. Existing Yammer case studies that demonstrate organizations have realized all these benefits. Before you go talk to a senior executive about the potential in your organization, get to understand those case studies. If you're looking for a great place to be overwhelmed with case studies, the All Things I See blog in the UK has a Yammer case studies listing. It's just a complete listing of case studies, and there are hundreds in every industry. You can find your own industry there, and All Things I See curates that list as those case studies update. So go find a case study you can put in front of your executive to help convince them that this is real and other organizations are getting there. Another really good trick is find out what your competitors are doing with social collaboration. Talk to your executives about how you're running behind. Because one of the things that comes about that maturity curve, the ongoing development of collaborative behaviours in your organisation, is once you're behind, you're always behind. And actually, the journey up the collaboration curve is a pretty exponential one. The value gets greater and greater as you go. So you don't want to be too far behind your competitors in this space. And that's a message your executives need to understand. The best time to start, if you haven't started already, is now. So, if you've got a senior executive's attention, and hopefully by this point you've captured his or her imagination with what's possible, and they're getting really excited, don't leave the meeting without getting money allocated to you, without getting resources, without getting what you need to be successful. When they're excited about how much value is going to be created is exactly the moment to ask for the resources for your project implementation, for your launch, and for ongoing community management and support. I've been talking across my sessions this week. Community managers, collaboration managers, whatever you call them, are your value strategists. They're the people who realize the value in your network. That's how you want your executives to understand it. You don't want them to think they're some social person who, you know, like the events management team that keeps everyone happy. You want to see them as a unit of realizing that strategic value, because that's how you ensure the investment in community sticks in your organization. Okay, you've got them excited, you've got your budget, you're all good to go. But your network's not going to be successful without senior executive participation. Networks can get a long way without senior executive participation, but it can't get to the real value we're talking about here. It can't create the David Thodey organisation where it drives changes in the culture and changes in the share price without senior executive participation. So to do that, you're going to have to get them to not just fund it, but to use it. And that runs into the time issue we talked about before. So we need to make it easy for senior executives to engage with Yammer and to start to use this tool in the way they work. Now, there are all sorts of people who work in all sorts of ways. And one of the things you've heard in this conference through the Office 365 sessions is not every tool is for everyone. There will be some people who just love Outlook and they're never going to be engaged in social collaboration. And that's okay. But you need a critical mass of executives to take it up and role model the behaviour. So ask them questions. What's their personal value? What are they looking to achieve out of it? What's their purpose? Are they concerned about their reputation in the organisation? Would they like to be more influential? Do they want to learn about social so they can create an industry reputation? There are many ways you can engage them in a conversation about how it will benefit them personally. Help them get access to the right groups. Help them learn how to become engagers instead of broadcasters. This was the biggest learning in my personal journey. Learning that the thing that really works in social collaboration is a well-phrased question. Even if you want to share stuff. If you want to share stuff, ask yourself what the question is that you want to talk about and share that conversation, share your information in the process of that conversation. Because if you ask an open question to the right audience, you'll have a much, much richer dialogue. Leaders know this because it's how they coach their teams. Help them to understand that what you're actually asking them to do is coach collaboration in the organization. Take the coaching behaviors they use with their leadership team and share it organizational-wide. And lastly, become rich people who share their experiences, their stories, and their networks. One of the most powerful things a senior leader could do, it was most of the value I brought to the first Yammer network I was involved in. I had worked in that bank for about 7 or 8 years. I'd worked in many divisions. I was at a reasonably senior level and I networked with a lot of peers. So I actually understood the organization well. One of the things I could bring to people who had problems was access to the person who could help them. My network reached further than theirs as a senior leader. And sharing your network is the easiest thing a senior executive can do. It requires almost no effort to at mention the person who's best placed to solve that problem and invite them into a conversation. So, what can leaders do in networks? They can share their networks, they can connect people. They can share their work. Senior executives often don't realize how fascinated everyone else is by what they're up to. Where are they? What clients are they talking to? What does that tell me about where the organization is and where it's going? What do I learn about success? We'll take some questions at the end, if that's all right. What do I learn as we go along? They can help solve challenges and they can role model innovation and the conversation, particularly by asking questions about what the opportunities are for innovation and where value is being created and what customer needs are and showing passion and interest for customer scenarios. So there's enormous amount just in those four words of connecting, sharing, solving and innovating that senior executives can do. And when you've worked out your strategy, a specific strategy for your organization of how value gets created, you can take these words and break them down so that the senior executives have specific tasks that connect to the strategy. So, we want you to connect people around our goals of innovation in product department X. We want you to share information you have about product X. You can start to tie it into a very specific use case and a very specific story about value. And that helps the senior executive with that common problem that he or she will have, which is, what do I put in the box? What do I say? What document do I attach? And how do I do that? By breaking it down to something as specific as sending an email, you actually reduce that barrier of adoption for them. So, help them to avoid the traps. They'll panic about responsibility when they start. Because, you know, we understand how responsibility runs in hierarchies. Responsibility in networks works in different ways. It's all about reputation and influencing reputation. One of the dangers you will see is senior executives, because they're busy people and they're supported by staff, whether it's an assistant, whether it's an executive manager, or whether it's a communications manager, is they might want to outsource. Can't we have a way for someone else to post on my profile? Social networks are amazingly intuitive. They can spot that in a second. Also, if you outsource it, that person usually doesn't have a good judge on what the senior executive would like to like or congratulate or all the personal and social things. When people ask me about how they can outsource, I always say, imagine you came to a conference like this and there was a cardboard cutout of Simon Terry standing here, and behind Simon Terry, that cardboard cutout, was Simon Terry's communication manager. How influential would this presentation be if it was a communication manager standing behind a cardboard cutout? Because that's what you're doing if you do outsourced or team accounts.
Just got to check. No, it's good.
It's good. There's actually someone here. And if you saw Kai's presentation the other day, he had some great examples about this broadcasting mentality. Anything you want to add about broadcasting?
There's a little story coming up in one or two slides, and I'll get onto it.
Okay, great.
There you go.
That was a segue.
Segue. Thanks, Simon. Yeah, so we've come up with this sort of tagline that we call, say, seeing how you work changes how you work. And we're tapping into, many senior executives are somewhat competitive. Do you have senior executives that are not competitive? I don't think so. Sometimes when you talk about the senior executive team, I'm not sure they are really a team, as in working together. Sometimes we get a sense that they are sometimes even working against each other are certainly competing. So we can tap into using analytics actually to contribute to two key things. One is to aid this friendly competition a little bit, and also as a part of, I guess, helping them understand what they are doing and how they can change. So we have five different personas that we operate with in Swoop, and one is an observer. And you can be an observer for quite a while and just not being on the network. But once it's kind of called out that you fall into the observer category, it's like, oh, I don't want to be that. What can I do? How do I change that? Then there are other people that can be called out as being broadcasters. And you mentioned the term a few times, and there are people that are actually posting things on Yammer, but not really getting much back. So there's few people that are liking it or responding to it. If your strategy is to engage and have authentic conversations like David Thodey was having with his staff, you're not a, that's different to broadcasting, right? So as Simon was saying, maybe you have to think about, well, what is it I'm writing? How do I frame things as a question rather than just a dictate? So broadcasters are simply roles that we don't want executives to fall in. We want to help them get out of being an observer and out of being a broadcaster. As an executive, that is not too good personas to fall in. So there are really three left. And a responder is not probably not the one that we'd really want executives to be. A responder is someone that wait until other people post. So they wait, it's much more reactive. So I'm waiting for a post, and then I'll jump in. And if you're really a terrible executive, you'll say, no, that's not right. Or you can't do that. And you kill off the conversation. And sometimes that can be a very thing if you don't like the conversation and you're worrying about, you know, where this might be going. But doing that sort of thing teaches the whole organization that, putting up things that are potentially controversial or slightly controversial, senior executives don't like that sort of thing. We also want executives to be much more proactive in sharing and asking questions. And if you are a responder, you're not someone that starts conversation. So the two that are really left are catalysts and engagers. And catalysts are the ones, they seed conversation. And actually, from an analytics perspective, this is quite easy to determine. We simply look at what's the relationship between the things you post and how much stuff you're getting back. And if you're getting more stuff back than what you're contributing, well, then you are a catalyst. So it's quite, algorithmically, it's quite simple, actually. And an engager, now that's kind of hard to achieve that. An engager has this very, very fine balance between posting and getting back. And you can imagine, as a senior executive, if you've got lots of people that are interested in what you're doing, becoming a catalyst is kind of almost easy. You ask a couple of really good questions and you're gonna get lots of people responding. To then become an engager, you have to continue the conversation, right? You have to continue the conversation, potentially with lots of people. But employees get very, very excited when they engage with executives. If you've ever tried it yourself and you get someone a few levels above yourself, and you see that they've clicked like against what you posted, you know the feeling, right? You know the feeling of, wow, they notice what I'm doing. And how much time does it take for an executive to click like? It's one button. And as Simon was saying, it's kind of hard to outsource that because it's hard for the person behind the cardboard to do that. So David Thodey, by doing the post that I showed earlier with 873 replies, he put himself straight into that catalyst role. Or if he's been really good in continuing the conversation and diving into what lied behind some of those improvement ideas, he could also be an engager. But these are the kind of questions that propel you into those roles. And that's the kind of personas that we want executives to role model. We want them to see what they're doing, and then we want what they're doing to lead to one of those two personas. Now, I was sitting with, it's me on the right, and it's a good friend of mine, Matt, who's on the left. Matt is a community manager in a large regional bank, and he was then exposing some of these executive or personas to his executives, and there was one particular person on the senior executive team who was a broadcaster. And they sat down, had a look at all the data, and said, ooh, this is not, seeing how you work changes how you work. I had not noticed that what I was doing was leading to that. And I can see how I compare against some of my fellow colleagues. And they are doing much better than I am. What am I doing wrong? What can I be doing better? And what actually was the case was exactly what Simon was pointing out. This senior executive had outsourced posting to a comms expert. And suddenly the penny dropped. I'm not writing in a real authentic style. The things that I'm asking my expert to push out are beautifully crafted statements that are obviously not engaging people. So executives are worried about typos. Doesn't matter. Actually, if there's a typo here and there, shows it's a real you. Even better doing it on a mobile. You can see that you're on the fly, you're doing things, it's really you doing it. And people absolutely love that, and they will click like and they'll engage with you. Of course, you have to be prepared for that engagement. So we're assuming here that actually executives can see the power in motivating staff. So there was an amazing transformation that Matt helped this senior executive, had to coax the senior executive, but well, maybe you need to think about crafting some of these messages yourself. And maybe you need to think about liking yourself. And this has had a transformational change in that person. That individual executive changed, is now on par with the other executives. But it takes it for us to expose that data to them so they can see what they are and what they need to be.
And if I can just make a point, so, you know, as you look through those swoop personas, an observer is connected to the network. They're just connected. They're just plugged in, logged in, having a look around. A broadcaster is sharing. And a responder is sharing too. They're just sharing when called upon. It's the catalysts and the engagers who are really driving that solving of work, the transformative potential of innovation. So as Kai says, there's enormous power in enabling people to see their pattern of interaction in the network and enabling them to self-coach. And this goes all the way up to the senior executives. They're most concerned because they're competitive. Your senior executives will see those models and say, oh, gee, I want to be most effective in this context. So how do we help them? First, you've got to make sure they have the right mindsets. This is a blog post that you'll find on, but to explain more about this, but help them understand first and foremost, the network wants them to be themselves. That's all of themselves, not just the senior executive persona they're used to portraying. People are really interested when senior executives share their life story, their career story, their challenges, their learnings, their personal story as well. Help them to think about networks. Help them to become catalysts and engagers who listen and engage with the network. That's a critical mindset. They can provide help and they can enable experiments. If a senior executive starts to take on these behaviors, they transform the way they interact with the network and they're really role modeling the network forward. They're really being a part of the collaborative culture change that happens in your organization. Because if senior executives are demonstrating this mindset, it's okay for everyone else to demonstrate these mindsets. Famous story from my history, many years ago when I was working as that senior executive. Actually, it was when I was a CEO. One of the employees of the bank came up to me and said, thank you for what you do in Yammer. And I was like, thank you. You know, I'm just sharing what I do. And they said, oh, no, you don't. I don't think you're understanding. You're actually my canary in the coal mine. I've worked out that when they come for you, it's a signal we should all back off, because I was quite a prolific engager in the network. And so they said, look, I tailor my behaviors to do just less than you do, so you're the first to go. And it's a good reminder that people are role modeling, but and there's a safety in, you know, doing less than senior executives are doing. If you want to get more sophisticated and you want to start to think about creating a real transformative culture change in your organization, this is where I'd encourage you to go. This is a model I've developed around key practices that transform organizations to enable them to benefit from the future of work behaviors. So, help executives to understand what and where to share through giving them support around working out loud. Help them manage the information overload that they already have with email and everything else going on by giving them access to personal knowledge management, which is a series of practices around how people can better manage information in their networks. There's a fantastic course that's available from Harold Jarkey that I'd recommend to anyone around how to seek out the right sources of information, how to filter, how to make sense of them, and then where to share to magnify your effectiveness in managing information. Leadership in networks is different to leadership with power. Leaders need to understand how to deal with systemic complexity, how to manage through influence. That also means managing through conflict, deliberately creating conflicts to change tension and change the organization. The literature around adaptive leadership from the Harvard Business School and programs that build the adaptive leadership capabilities of your leaders will accelerate their effectiveness in this network environment. And this is a change that I went through myself. I've seen it implemented in multiple organizations. It doesn't just change collaboration. It changes the way your leaders engage with stakeholders. It changes their effectiveness and the engagement of the teams around them as well. And lastly, think about how you move from traditional hierarchical decision-making to new modes of autonomy in decision-making. Experimentation is a big part of that transformation. Moving away from the idea that experts make decisions to realizing that there's a whole lot of stuff you can A-B test or test with little agile experiments, and take the 44 weeks of experts sitting in a room deciding what we do next out of your organizational process and just go straight to an experiment of all the best ideas and pick the winners. Helping your organization through these changes enables your organization to see opportunities faster, to enable its people faster, to empower people to actually get on with the work, and finally to deliver and then begin that cycle again. So there's a big opportunity here, and this is kind of advanced practice, but it's where your organization will go as it matures, and you want your senior executives to be thinking through how they change their approach. Because if they're sitting in traditional modes, keeping all their work private, managing flows of information in a very restricted way, leading through the hierarchy only, and perhaps through only their team, and pulling all the decisions up to themselves, you're going to miss the benefits of that value you set out to achieve in terms of collaboration. So thinking through some of the organizational design and some of the culture change that's required is an important part of that journey. So encourage people in your organization to work out loud. I've done a couple of sessions on this. The key here is make work visible and encourage people to narrate the work and to do so purposefully. Others can then contribute and others can learn by watching. And there's three habits. This is a great one for senior executives. It only takes 5 minutes three times a day. So, describe the day ahead when you have your first cup of coffee. Interact with others and respond to their problems. And lastly, recognize and celebrate people's achievements at the end of the day. Every executive can celebrate someone else's work every day, and we don't do it enough.
Okay, the very last thing on the agenda today is just tapping into that competitive spirit, right? Westpac is a very large Australian bank, and we're tapping into that sort of competitive intelligence. So this is in terms of sort of exposing some of this data to senior people and tapping into that, you know, want to do better, So they've actually got up on the on display dashboards that show senior leadership engagement, and they and also how various communities are going, and it's all about basically backing it up with data and analytics to make sure that it's being reinforced. So that's all we had today. I just want to thank, first of all, just want to say a quick thanks to Simon, because if you've heard about this session here, there hasn't been much talk about technology and buttons and server configuration. And I think that's wonderful in a week where it's very much dedicated to technology. I think I'm not sure we'll take questions right here, right now, because I know that Simon has actually got a flight he has to catch. So I know you, mm-hmm. I'm not sure how I'll hand it over to you, but just got to be mindful of your flight.
I want to say, it's a long way back to Australia. So thank you to all of you for devoting time right through to the end of this conference. And thank you to Kai for being my partner in crime this week as well. Thank you, everyone. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.